Roll call.
Roll call for Thursday, February 19th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Escobel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Fladern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
30 present.
Sorry for being late, but our staff was still working through the last minutes. We're ready to get started. If the Father Dickey would please lead us in the prayer. Let me get you your microphone.
Let us pray to the Lord. Lord, have mercy, almighty God and creator. You are the Father of all the people of the earth. Guide, we pray, all nations and their leaders, and the leaders of this state in the ways of justice and peace. Protect us from the evils of injustice, prejudice, exploitation, conflict, and war. Help us to put away mistrust, bitterness, and hatred. Teach us to cease the storing and using the implements of war. Lead us to find peace, respect, and freedom. Unite us in the making and sharing of tools of peace against ignorance, poverty, and disease and oppression. Grant that we may grow in harmony and friendship as brothers and sisters created in your image. To your honor and praise. Amen. The prayers of our Holy Fathers, Lord Jesus Christ, our God, have mercy on us and save us. Amen.
Father, today's third reading, I understand you have a chant we're supposed to do for the Pulpified chant.
I can do that.
We'd like to have
Save, O Lord, O Lord, your people, and bless your inheritance. Grant victory to the faithful against the adversaries of the faith, and protect your people through the power of your cross. Sōsōn kīrie, tōn laon tsū, kē evlōgīsōn, tīn kīron amīon tsū, nī kastīs vasīlevsīn, kētā vāvāvāron dōrūmenos, kēton tsōn pīlāton, nī atū stavrūsū polītēvmā. Be in peace and thank God and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for all circumstances with the power of the cross. That's just one.
Keep that in mind when you're fighting today. Join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you, Father. Tomorrow, if we're still standing, may I ask for the second chant? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce to the Senate a former member of this body, my predecessor here, Dick Sadler, and ask you to make him welcome.
Hey. If the reading clerk would please read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee report that the Journal of February the 18th, 2015, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
You've heard the report. Without objection, the Journal Committee report is adopted. Folks, it's with great honor and privilege that we welcome Senator Mike Enzi back to Wyoming.
Senator Enzi, as some of you remember, served in the House from 1987 through 1991 and served in the Senate from 92 through 1996. He was sworn into the United States Senate in 1997 and has been serving the people of Wyoming ever since. He is currently the chairman of the U.S. Senate's Committee on Budget and serves as a member of the Committee on Finance, Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and the Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship, as well as the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. If you'd all welcome Senator Enzi, and we'd like for you to come up and...
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. President, if I could have the privilege of the floor.
You may have the privilege of the floor.
Diane and I are so pleased to be with you. I love to make an annual visit to the legislature. You know, it's good to see legislators really working and getting things done. And, of course, I'm here on a really classic day because you're finishing up the budget. And that's a new role that I've gotten. I got to be the chairman of the budget committee. I'm the first accountant to be the chairman of the budget committee, and we haven't had a budget for 6 years. We go ahead and spend money, but we haven't had a budget for 6 years. So it's kind of like doing an audit on a business that kept their stuff in a shoebox and let you see it once every 6 years. But we're getting it unraveled, and I can tell you that people do go to sleep with numbers. There's an advantage to that. While they're asleep, you can get a lot done. But I'm having a few problems because we don't have a balanced budget requirement, and we should. I'm trying to bring us to a balanced budget. It looks like maybe I can get us on a track to do one in 10 years. That's under the normal process. I'm trying to change that process with my penny plan. If we can do the penny plan where we just quit spending 1 cent out of every dollar we spend right now, we can balance the budget in 3 years. Still too long. You know, with the $18 trillion that we owe, and incidentally, that's a bit of a lie, looking into the accounting on it, Social Security or bonds in a drawer, I tell them it's really accounts payable. We got to pay that sometime. So that really ought to be part of the debt. And they assure me that sometimes when we raise the debt limit, that it's to cover future Social Security debt that we owe. Another problem that we have is we're talking about spending $1.1 trillion a year. Well, anytime you move something down to one, doesn't sound like much. So I'm trying to get everybody to talk about $1,100 billion, because that's what we're spending. That's $1.1 trillion. And they like to talk about we don't need to balance the budget. We can just do a percentage of GNP, gross national product. Well, that's the money that's made in the private sector, which has to be taxed in order to get government to go. So if you increase that, you decrease the GNP. And if we could increase that, the statistics show that if we could get the GNP to go up by 1%, over 10 years, we'd take in $4 trillion more dollars than we take in now. So there are a lot of things that we're working on that. Our process, we actually have authorizing committees, and they say what the money can be spent on. Then we have a budget committee that sets the parameters for how much money they can spend within that area. And then we have a spending committee that actually says the detail stuff. So it's a long process. We haven't been through any of those in completely by the deadlines in over a decade. So it's an interesting task. I love the way you do it here. If we could get more of the policies of the Wyoming legislature adopted, we'd be able to get more done. I would say that I know that this gets to be a tense time in the legislature as you wrap down to the last few days and try to wrap up the last details. And I saw people scurrying around this morning making a few adjustments with, I hate to call it deals because that's illegal. A few adjustments with people, and I remember doing that. We used to get to turn in amendments on the budget a lot later than you get to. You had that in by last night, and probably a good plan, too. I might put that in the federal budget as well. But we're going through the regular process back there now, where things go to committee, and they get to amend them in committee, and then they come to the floor, and they get to amend them on the floor. And so we've been passing a bill a week, which is much different than the last couple of years. In fact, each week we've had more amendments on the floor than we had the previous year in the United States Senate. So that really, even though people lose their amendments, at least know they're representing their people. And so that's a big help at kind of bringing everybody together again. But we have tempers back there, too, and I know you're going to be having some. And so I'd mentioned the National Prayer Breakfast, which was about 2 weeks ago. And a NASCAR driver was our speaker, Darrell Waldrop. And you can go online to National Prayer Breakfast 2015, and you can see the speech that he gave. I would mention that he's dyslexic, but he talks about his faith journey, and ties it in a little bit with racing. So as you get into some tension, you might just want to go online and watch that for a few minutes. It'd be well worth your time. Our National Prayer Breakfast, of course, helps the Senate and the House, who each have weekly prayer breakfasts, to take word around the world. And we have prayer breakfast started in 130 countries. We don't promote it, but if they ask us, we'll go do that. And I remember a trip I had to the Congo. And we went to Goma because we were going to look at some UN troops who were supposed to be trained by United States troops. They didn't let them do any training, but we did meet with their parliament. And they wanted to know about our prayer breakfast. So we told them about it, and they had us hold one immediately. And as soon as we finished the prayer breakfast, we heard from the administration that now they needed to know what the parliament was doing, so they wanted to meet too. And we had a prayer breakfast with the administration. And that's brought people together in that country. And every year they come back to the United States and they report to us that their groups are still going, but they have a little competition between administration and parliament. Easy to understand. And so that's made a difference in that country and many others. I remember being in South Africa and meeting with their prayer breakfast. And after we had our prayer breakfast, we had this little session to see how we could help each other out. And I suggested, why don't you tell us what your issues are, and we'll tell you what our issues are, and we can pray for each other's issues. And a great big guy named Paul said, no. Do not pray for the issues. Pray for the people, and the people will solve the issues. And that's what you're doing. You're solving the issues. So pray for each other through these last days. And I think things will go as well as they can. So I would also pass on my 80% rule. Sometimes this gets confused. I've used it in Washington. I learned it in the Wyoming legislature. I have found that you can talk civilly about 80% of the issues. And if you stick to those 80%, you'll be able to find some that you can also agree on, 80%. Now, I have found that most issues, there's a 10% Republican idea and a 10% Democrat idea, and you're never going to give up on those ideas. They just clash with each other. And so what we do under the 80% rules, we leave those out and let them work on it some more. And doing that process, we get some bills through that have been languishing for 10 or 12 years. That doesn't happen here, but back there, that's a common thing to have happen. So look for that 80% common ground and get things done for the people of Wyoming. And I already know that you do that because I watch your productivity and I watch how few corrections you have to make to a bill when you come back. You do better than the legislatures that meet year-round, and I congratulate you for it. Of course, I know that's because you're Wyoming people. Thank you for this opportunity to visit. Thank you.
Senator, thank you very much, and Diana, thank you for everything that you do. We know it's a lot of work for you to take care of them, and we sure appreciate you being here. Today, the doctor of data is Dr. Eric Cuban. I don't think he's around right now. And then Dr. Jolynn Roy is from
The registered nurse is our nurse of the day from Wyoming Medical Center. Today is day 26 of the 37th legislature, and we're on the third reading budget bill. We do have some messages from the House. If the messages please be read in.
February the 18th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 309, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 5. The House conferees are Representative Petroff, Chairman, Representative Barlow, and Eklund. February the 18th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number 310, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to Senate File 13. The House conferees are Representative Croker, Chairman, Representative Nicholas and Pawnell. From the House of Representatives, message number 311, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 22. The House conferees are Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman, Representative Pawnell, and Representative Waters. House of Representatives, message number 312, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the House appointed House conferees to meet with the Light Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Joint Resolution 3. The House conferees are Representative McKim, Chairman, Representative Hunt and Lindholm, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. You want any of these back?
We have reports from standing committees. If those would please be read in.
February the 19th, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 128, engrossed, Notice Requirements Special District Election, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 126, engrossed, Candidate Filing Requirements, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. No, Senator Case, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 39, Aggregate Campaign Contribution Limits Repeal, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 18th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 8, engrossed, Longer Combination Vehicles Compact Agreement, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobill, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman. February the 18th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill number 197, engrossed, Emergency Vehicles, Tow Trucks, and Wreckers. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman. February the 18th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill number 172, engrossed, Disability Placard Destination, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman. February the 18th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 181, Speeding Penalties in 80-mile-per-hour Zone. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, and Meyer, no, Senator Johnson, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
We have bills on second reading. Mr. Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have a privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, as you can probably tell, I dressed up for today for third reading. And, of course, you all know that I have people. And to prove my point, I would like to, the president has a new grandson.
Oh, is that?
And I knew about his new grandson before he did.
It's true.
It's a true story. And so I just want you to know, I want you to have a little respect today as I get up to try to beat you down. And thank you for the moment.
It's true.
Mr. President,
well, as the Senator Ross knows, that the baby came late Monday night. I went home late Monday night, went to sleep, left my phone at home, and he called me last night about the time I arrived to see my wife and said, "You dog, you didn't tell me about your grandson." And I'm like, "What grandson?" So I get the Grandson of the Year award today, but not yesterday. That's pretty special. Thank you. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. One other special announcement is that they're going to have auditions today at 12 o'clock for Godfather 4. And Chairman Ross will be conducting those auditions. Well, he left. He didn't even. He's not even here to hear what I had to say, which is normal, Mr. President.
Just practice. All right. Are these all the second reading bills? My gosh. Senator Burns gets the second reading, or the could be the whole ward. Second reading of the bills. House Bill 15, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 15, Restoration of Voting Rights by Department of Corrections.
There are no amendments. Senator Scott.
Mr. President.
Yes.
Can we ask to have this House bill laid back one day for second reading for the preparation of amendments?
Absolutely. Without objection, House Bill 15 is laid back for second reading for tomorrow, which is Friday. House Bill 17, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders.
There are no amendments, no objection. House Bill 17. There is an amendment. We're catching up. We'll get there. We do have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read it in.
House Bill number 17, second reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 7, line after line 5.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senator amendment number 1 to House Bill 17 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. What this does addresses, Mr. President, addresses the concerns of some individuals to strike some balance into this thing. What you're faced with in this, in the sexual assault protective order situation, Mr. President, and the need for this amendment is that if charges have not been filed, that an individual who's accused of that may or may not have been charged, and if they go to this to the hearing on the protective order, they'll be faced with the untenable situation of either remaining silent and not defending themselves against the order, or otherwise potentially incriminating themselves and having that then used later against them. So what this amendment does is seek to relieve that problem, kind of separates, Mr. President, separates the civil aspect of obtaining a protection order from the non-civil from the criminal part. And so what it does is it takes, and unless an individual's been charged, if they've already been charged, then this wouldn't apply. But if they have not been yet to be charged, they can go and whatever they say in the hearing, they can defend themselves, and ultimately they would not, then the evidence that they provide, whether it's testimony or documentary evidence that they would provide, cannot be used later in the criminal proceeding. That does not preclude, I don't think that affects, Mr. President, the prosecution's effort, and that they're in no different place than they were before. They wouldn't have the right to compel testimony or evidence from an accused in any event, and so they're in no different position. And if the person has been charged, then it wouldn't apply. And whatever, if they have already been charged, then the person obviously is on notice that there are criminal charges pending, and they can either take the stand or not take the stand in defense of their of this protective order. So, working with the good senator from the southwest part of the state, we've working with the good senator from Cheyenne who has strong feelings about these things, we crafted this amendment so to provide that no testimony or evidence of the alleged actor in the hearing pursuant to subsection A of this section shall be deemed admissible, including for impeachment purposes, or deemed to be a waiver of their protections against self-incrimination by the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, unless, and this is the exception, unless an information or indictment has been filed in a district court charging them with the sexual assault which pulls into this statute. So, with that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration. I believe that this strikes some balance, at the same time protecting victims and also protecting and enabling someone who's been accused, if they believe it wrongfully, to speak up and not have to worry about choosing between the lesser of two evils as they defend it. Thank you, Mr. President.
You've heard an explanation of the amendment. Are there any discussion? Question is on second amendment. Senator Hastert.
Just quickly, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the work that was done, and this is all about what our good senator from Washington spoke of as the 80% and amazing, you know, and finding common ground and working together. And I, you know, applaud the efforts. I started out to help victims years ago, and I believe we're still doing that, and it's all in the spirit intended. And I appreciate the efforts.
All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. There are no other amendments. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion? If not, House Bill 17 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. House Bill 21, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 21. Intestate succession, adopted children.
House Bill 21, there are no amendments, no discussion. House Bill 21, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection is so ordered. House Bill 27, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 27, NRC Agreement State Authorization.
We do have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read it in.
House Bill Number 27, Second Reading Amendment 1, to engrossed copy, page 4, line 17.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move Second Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 27 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, I brought this on second reading simply because I was in the chair yesterday. Otherwise, it would have been a committee of the whole amendment. One of the benefits of this piece of legislation is, as was mentioned in the explanation yesterday on page 4, where the once we get the stand-up on this particular agency, the fees charged will pay for everybody who's in the who is doing the regulation. And this bill calls for eight new employees, six from DEQ, two from the Attorney General's office. What it did mention is the fact DEQ actually has nine employees, not six. Six will be the new ones. We have three current employees. And in testimony from this, the head of DEQ stated that the intent of the bill is for the industry and the fees to pay for all their employees. So that was not explicitly stated in the bill because it's just stated by this act. So all this amendment does is state that the fees will pay for everybody doing the regulation, all 11 employees instead of just eight.
Discussion, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think this amendment is just fine. I just wanted to clarify that this is once again assuming once the program is stood up, we have those three and it pays for all three of those at that point in time is what I believe the intent is. If that's the intent, then I certainly have no problem with it, and I would support the amendment. Just to clarify that we're not trying to get back into the startup period, which we don't have a fee structure for, and the way it's worded, I was a little uncertain. So if the bringer of the amendment can clarify that, I would appreciate it. But I believe I'm on and for the amendment.
Any discussion before we return to the movement for a second time? Back to the movement. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, for my second time, that is the intent of the bill. There is no backfill intended here. The fees start once the thing is stood up, and then the fees going forward will pay for everybody involved in regulation on the part of the state government.
On the amendment, all those in favor of second reading amendment number 1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has been adopted. We're now back on the bill. Any further discussion? House Bill 27 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 30, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 30, Deposits and Depositories.
No amendments. Any discussion? House Bill 30, having been read two separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 36, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 36, Emergency 9/11 Providers Immunity.
No amendments, no discussion. House Bill 36, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 37, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 37, Telephone Assistance Program Repeal.
No amendments, no discussion. House Bill 37, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 42, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 42, Unclaimed Property Merchant Stored Value Cards.
There are no amendments, no discussion. House Bill 42, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 51, Second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 51, Excise Tax Well Site.
We do have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read it in.
House Bill 51, second reading, Amendment 1, to engrossed copy. Delete the Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. With the chairman of the Revenue Committee, I bring this amendment to correct the Standing Committee amendment that we adopted yesterday. And we should have caught it, and we apologize. But yesterday's amendment on page 4 of the bill deleted a word separators, which was a standalone word, and inserted units. And that was incorrect. The amendment should have actually gone to the very next line, deleted the word compressors, and inserted the word unit, so that we're talking about vapor recovery units, not vapor recovery compressors. And I apologize for wasting the committee the whole time yesterday, but this fixes it and is what the committee voted on.
Any further discussion? Question is on second reading, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 51. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. Any further discussion? There being none, House Bill 51, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. House Bill 52, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 52, Sales Tax Exclusion Related Business Entities.
There are no amendments, no discussion. House Bill 52, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 53, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 53, Minerals to Value Added Product Facility Fund Program.
House Bill 53, no discussion, no amendments. House Bill 53, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. House Bill 54, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 54, Corrective Action Account Distribution.
No amendments, discussion. House Bill 54, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. House Bill 55, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 55, Solid Waste Program Amendments.
No amendments or discussion. House Bill 55, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 63, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 63, Unclaimed Property Advertising.
No amendments or discussion. House Bill 63, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection. So ordered. House Bill 15, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 15, Restoration of Voting Rights by Department of Corrections.
House Bill 15, no amendments or objection or discussion. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 82, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 82, Brewery and Microbrewery Licenses Definition.
House Bill 82, no amendments or discussion. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 111, second reading of the bill.
House Bill 111, Resort Liquor Licenses.
House Bill 111, there are no amendments or discussion. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 113, second reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 113, Cigarette Certification.
House Bill 113. There are no amendments or discussion. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 136. Second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 136, Interstate Game Tag Exemption Meat Processors.
House Bill 136, no discussions, no amendments. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. House Bill 154, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 154, Complementary Hunting Licenses Persons with Disabilities.
We have an amendment. If the clerk would please read it in.
House Bill 154, second reading, amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 154. Members of the body, the language that was stricken out of there last year is just a policy shift. It says that we're going to donate these completely free, where before that they had to pay the $272 license fee to acquire those license. I think it was talked about yesterday. Basically, the cost is a little over $14,000. Not a lot of money. But members of the body, I just remind you that last year in the budget, we appropriated $2.2 million or a little more to go to the Game and Fish Department because of shortfalls. But the bigger issue here, I think, is just one of parity. If I can speak to the amendment, Mr. Chairman, if you just go in there, it says we can still issue these free. That's still the policy. But it moves it from an antelope license that just says a doe fawn antelope license. The second part of this is just to make sure that we're issuing those out of those areas where there's sufficient number of leftover permits, that we're not taking those from somebody that would have normally paid the $272 non-resident license fee. I just looked at the Game and Fish database. There was over 3,000 leftover doe fawn licenses last year. That's after the draws. There's a lot of licenses left over. This still provides the opportunity to hunt for those individuals through those nonprofit organizations. It just says we're going to give you a free license. You can go hunt antelope, but it's a $35 license instead of a $272 license. I'd ask for your favorable consideration of a yes on the amendment, Mr. President.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, I guess on and against the amendment, a couple of reasons there. I'm not sure if we're going to have any problems with the disabled population as far as identification of doe fawn versus buck. I'm not sure whether there's going to be any problems in that, but if there is a problem and they by mistake shoot a buck, then that's the consequences of that is going to be a lot more than 30 some bucks for a license. That, you know, there's a lot of fees associated with it and fines and penalties and whatnot. Then there's going to be administrative impact, I think, if we do it this way. Rather than the way we're doing it, we're not really making any changes. We don't have any special type of licenses as far as whether it's a doe or a fawn or any sex. And then there's going to have to be a determination every year because the underprescribed areas more likely than not change every year. And so the department's going to have to go in and identify those. Make sure that there's a communication between everybody involved in the licensing process about where those are. And, you know, I think it's just going to be a lot more burdensome to where we're only talking about 50 licenses. And if you look at the 50 licenses in proportion to the total amount of licenses, Mr. President, it's 0.00086%. This is a very de minimis program. It's just for 50 licenses. It's a simple program. We're trying to complicate it.
Further discussion? Further discussion? The question is on second reading amendment number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has been adopted. back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill? I apologize. George? So, we called for the question on second reading number one to House Bill 154. The amendment was adopted. We're now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion? If not, House Bill 154 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. House Bill 155, second reading of the bill.
House Bill number 155, Hunters Who Use Wheelchairs Donated Licenses.
No amendments or discussion. House Bill 155, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. The next bill is being reread in, as there was an error in the way I read it in. To be clear for the record, House Bill 15 was laid back for second reading for tomorrow. House Bill 82, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. And that simply clarifies the prior record. That finishes second reading. We're now at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage. Senate File 1.
Senate File 1, General Government Appropriation, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We do have amendments. I'll get that out over there. First Amendment is third reading amendment number 16. If the reading clerk would please read it. The First Amendment is third reading amendment number 16. If the reading clerk would please read it in.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 16. Oh, a whole lot of sections affected.
What?
It's a whole lot of stuff. Senator Ross.
I'm glad you guys are learning the meaning of the word respect. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 16 to Senate File 1. This is brought to us by our staff. There are a number of different places where they had to do some technical corrections. And this cleans up those gaffes that were already in the budget so far, and urge your favorable support.
You've heard the explanation. Any further discussion on the amendment? There being none, the question is on third reading amendment number 16. There is no appropriation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. The next item is third reading amendment number 18. If the reading clerk would please read the amendment in.
Senate file number 1, third reading amendment number 18, budgets affected, section 04, state treasurer.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this brings to the issue of the, Mr. Chairman, I would move third reading amendment number 18 to Senate file 1 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this brings back to the body for consideration the job positions that the treasurer wanted for some extra analysts. After, you know, listening intently to the floor about the concerns that they had, talking to the treasurer and understanding about when these funds would actually be needed and when he could implement the plan of getting a couple of extra analysts on, we changed this amendment and came back to it in this form. So, Mr. Chairman, what it does in paragraph A, it says, prior to any expenditures or reclassification of positions, the state treasurer will provide a report to the JAC Interim Committee regarding implementation of developing an investment strategy and implementing personnel decisions in accord with the footnote. The footnote part here, B, Mr. President, it says that there's a $152,000 appropriated from the Permanent Mineral Trust Reserve account created in 94719B. Mr. President, the easiest way to describe this reserve account is that it's the first coffee pot that's filled with any new money that comes into the system. So if you have any unanticipated, unprofiled revenues that the treasurer would generate from investments or any other areas where we would have those monies that would be originated, that's the first coffee pot that gets filled, or coffee can that gets filled, and that's where these $152,000 would come out of. We go in and we define the positions, and those are the ones that one is a current vacant position and one is an existing position. We say that they both will be investment analysts. We leave the job description entirely up to the state treasurer. The salaries are along the same cap is what currently exists and is what been and what has been discussed, not to exceed $152,000. The treasurer felt that as his plan has been implemented and after talking to him previously, I think if we implement it on the 1st of January of next year, we'd be able to get 6 months of analysts on the job the last 6 months of the biennium, and that's why it's $152,000. That pays for two salaries at 6 months. So, Mr. President, this, I think, listened to what everybody was saying on the second reading, really pinpoints it to the last 6 months of the biennium, and I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President. Apparently, you weren't listening very well. You got to have some humor here, folks. I apologize. This is tough duty, so I would just urge you to reject this amendment. There's a couple things here, folks. First of all, the position 0019 has been vacant for quite some time. And with this, you're going to increase the salary to a position that has been vacant for quite some time. The other position is a new position. You're going to go in to the SPRAW, basically, to get these funds and do it effectively January 1, 2016. I suggest to you that if there will be plenty of time for us to do that when we come back in the budget session. This is not the way to do it, and I'd urge you to defeat the amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Chairman Onan, against the amendment. I took the opportunity yesterday to go down and visit with our state treasurer. I wanted to confirm with him if what we had done in the Joint Appropriations Committee meeting in the bills that as it stands was what would work for him. And in talking very specifically, unequivocally said he was fine with what it was. What the Joint Appropriations, without this amendment, Mr. President, what Joint Appropriations does is it increases the salary position of the CIO to the amount that he requested. It provides him, it increases the salary for one position to $152,000, which he will then, once he gets the new CIO in place, that CIO will start hiring the bench underneath him. So the whole purpose of this effort is to start to fill this bench. It's going to take a while for that to happen. The treasurer's on board with what the JAC did. He thinks it's a workable plan, and we'll be back here in a year. And so in a year, he'll be back down here. We'll be visiting about where he's at, see if he's got the people he wants, see where his bench is. If he's ready to have that other position filled and we're ready to do that, we'll have the opportunity to vote on it next year. But right now, this is an opportunity that you're provided with to simply provide a position that's going to take a while to fill. While the treasurer did ask for that in his original budget in our discussions and how we worked with him, we did one thing, we talked to him some more, and then we changed it to where it is now. And so, quite frankly, this is not really necessary at this point in time, and we urge you to resist it.
Senator Cole.
President, on and for the amendment, I did visit with the treasurer last night, and I think we have to keep into perspective what we're talking about here. We are trying to fill this position, and it's a very, very important position. We're talking about the oversight of some $17 billion of the people's money. And this gives him another tool in the toolbox, I think, to go out there and effectively do what he has to do to protect what's going on out there with all these funds. And I told him about the amendment. He said, you know, I support that. He said, that's fine. He said, we'll work with it. We'll work through it. And very, very important, I think, that we give him all the tools that he needs to be able to facilitate the process of filling this position that we lost in the last year since the budget session to the state next door, where they paid this guy twice as much to do pretty much the same thing. So I'd urge that you support the amendment.
Chair is going to have to start ruling on hearsay objections. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. Members of the Senate, we have given him a lot of tools, and you have to look at what we've done in this budget to do that. Let him work with what he has, and if we need to make some changes, let's do it through the process that we typically would do. That's when we do the budget bill next year. I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Office.
And briefly, on and for the amendment, once again, with the magnitude of the funds that we have that need to be invested diligently, this is a relatively small investment compared to the needs of the Treasurer's Office. This is a way to help facilitate bringing in expertise and ensuring that we're investing our nearly $20 billion in the best manner possible. $152,000-ish relative to $20 billion seems like a reasonable investment for the state of Wyoming.
Further discussion? Back to the movement for his last time.
No, you got
Perkins. Oh, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. President, I can guarantee you, because in my experience, it's very true. If you go and ask any department head if they give them more money, if they can do some more with it, they will always say, yeah, we'll take it and we'll work with it and work our way through it. Folks, again, to understand, we are in the process of reorganizing this department. We have given him what he wants for his chief investment officer. He's in the process of going to look for that. That's already funded. We've given him his second bench which is a vacant position at $152,000, which is will be vacant until the CIO is hired on board, has his or her feet on the ground. Then they'll look at filling the second position. What this amendment does is provide then still another third position. It's not necessary at this time. Our treasurer has lots of help. He's got lots of expertise. We pay $42 million a year in investment fees or thereabouts with all the experts that we have out there. We have lots of access to people who can get the job done. I would urge you to resist this amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, back to the movement for a second and final time. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I think there's a common theme here, and it's going to be interesting to see whether that common theme persists throughout the budget amendments. And that common theme is we've got plenty of time to do it next budget session. The process we do is the budget bill next year. And, you know, it's really going to be interesting whether that common theme persists in all of the amendments that are before us and whether that was a common theme in the budget. That being said, Mr. President, specifically on the amendment, I have to agree with the good senator from the ivory tower that $152,000 is a very, very small fund amount in comparison to $20 billion. And I would say it's a very small amount in comparison to the $42 million of funds that are used for management services within the treasurer that was just talked about from our good senator from the center part of the state. And I definitely have to thank my good friend from Park County taking the time and his time to discuss this process. He was against the process of adding a few folks to the treasurer's team, but after talking to the treasurer and understanding the direction and the enthusiasm that our treasurer has to building the bench, I thank the good senator from Park County in supporting it at this time. Folks, I think it's the right thing to do, and it is the right time to do it. The difference basically is going to be about 5 or 6 months in implementation as to whether or not we're going to have these folks in the treasurer's office. By the time they do come on in the treasurer's office, the chief investment officer will be there. The new analyst that they would have hired for equities would have come on board. They would have been getting their act together in those areas of investments. And simply this just brings in other analysts and other areas of investments of the state for that $20 billion so we can do the best job we can. And I ask for your favorable consideration.
If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
No.
Wasserberger? President Nicholas.
No.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 8 ayes, 22 no.
Third reading amendment number 18 to Senate file 1 has failed. If the reading clerk would please read in third reading amendment number 1.
Senate file number 1, third reading amendment number 1, budget affection. Section 45, Department of Transportation.
Senator Anderson, J.L.
Mr. President, I'll have to reconsider this. Maybe we can lay it back or vote it up and vote it down. I don't know what this is.
The wrong Anderson. Let's go to Senator Anderson, 02, and we're on third reading amendment number one.
Mr. President.
Yes.
I'm James D. Thank you.
That's what I thought. Who's James L? No, we'll give him a chance. Let's give Senator Anderson, James L, a copy of the amendment. It's third reading amendment one. If somebody give him help. All right. It is yours. Are you rested? Get your breath. All right. So
this is
slow down. You got to move it first.
Oh, I'd like to move amendment number one to Senate file number one. Well, I didn't know this was going to be number one.
That can happen.
There is a duplication. On page 30, the section 8 and the section 10, they both say the same thing, and section 10 says it better, and this good little amendment eliminates section number 8. Section number 8, page 30. Page 30, lines 19 through 25, and then on page 31, lines 1 through 3. And they are replaced by section number 10 on page 32, which says exactly what it's supposed to say. So I would move the passage of third reading amendment number 1 to eliminate the duplication in the budget. Thank you.
All right, so the amendment, as I see it, deletes footnote 8. And amends I just make sure everybody agrees that the footnote could be eliminated since it's from a prior budget. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, Mr. President, I think it was explained very carefully. And what we did, it's on the planning for Highway 59 and 2026, but the language is redundant. However, there is the major difference between the two. 10's already in there. 10 includes $2 million for the planning part of it. And so there is some redundancy between the two.
Okay, further discussion, Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I really don't see any harm in deleting 8. I think everything we were after was covered in 10. It just says it more generally in 8, but I guess I'm in favor of the amendment.
Senator Landon.
President, thank you. I'm sure that fellow senators, you've picked up on the fact that 8 does include a plan that comes back to our Joint Appropriations Committee and to our Joint Transportation Military Affairs Committee. I guess it's just a matter of whether you want to eliminate that information coming back to our committees so that it can be vetted and go into the next session. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion, Senator Perkins.
Mr. President, if you look at the footnotes, while they do have some overlap, they do different things. If you look, the footnote on page 30 talks about a plan to develop, mitigate impacts on non-interstate highways with emphasis on highly traveled roads, especially those with truck and industrial commercial traffic, and identify opportunities for safety improvements. Am I on the wrong? So you do that. So you're looking at that, what that's doing, And then if you look what's over here, it's a little bit different. It's you're, first of all, you're appropriating, you're making sure that $2 million of the appropriation on page 32, $2 million appropriation shall only be expended for planning and design of 20 passing lanes. And so one of them is very specific, talking about passing lanes to improve safety and mobility on state highways. The other one is broader in talking about additional safety improvements through any number of things, including passing or turning lanes. It could be rumble strips, could be other things. So one is quite broad, the other one's quite narrow. And by eliminating the one, you may get what's done in number 10, but you don't necessarily have the broader reach that's provided in the original footnote, or in footnote 8, which is the one that would be deleted. And so with that, I don't know that that's the intended effect. And I think you should, it's not just a matter of, there is some duplication between the two, but they're not specifically addressing the exact same issues.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, I believe that the way this reads, you would be deleting $2 million from severance funds for passing lanes. So I would ask the body to vote no.
Further discussion before we go back to the movement for a second time?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, this paragraph 8 is a study amendment, study paragraph. Section 10 is an action amendment. And Section 10 paragraph says you go ahead and do it, don't study it. That's the objection between 8 and 10 and why we like 10 better. 10 goes ahead and says, get 20 lanes done, don't study it. Department has been studying these things for years, and we have enough studying. We need to get something done. So that's why we're in favor of paragraph 10 over paragraph 8. Thank you.
I just want to, I don't want to get an amendment that's in that we're not fully understanding. And what I could tell is between the explanation and people's response that there's not a clear agreement with respect to what this does. I think these were complementary. They were not one or the other. And this is one that we really should have talked out before it was filed. So what I'm going to do is lay back Amendment 3, third reading amendment number 1, and we'll bring it in a 4 or 5, we'll bring it back before we vote on it. And if the sponsor will get with the folks on the JAC and make sure that it's doing what he wants, and we'll bring it back. So without objection, third reading amendment number 1 is going to be laid back until we absolutely know what the amendment does, okay? That takes us to third reading amendment number 2, corrected copy.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 2, corrected copy, budgets affected, section 45, Department of Transportation.
Senator Von Fladern.
Thank you, Mr. President. This has a lot to do with the last amendment you just had. I had to check the names in it myself. Last time I stood up, we asked for some money that, of course, was defeated in this body to help with the 59 issue and the 2026 issue. What this does is make it a higher priority for YDOT by telling them they will hold some meetings, that the findings of the legislature, as established in little B on the first page of the amendment, talks about the volatility and the crisis level that the traffic has reached on that, and that the whole public meetings in Douglas, Wright, and Shoshone, Wyoming, no later than the end of March, and then after a month, they'll, on May 1st, the department shall provide a written report to the Joint Appropriations, Joint Minerals, Business, And it's a written report at this time because we don't know our own meeting schedule. So we're just saying that they're going to provide a written report and that at least identify the traffic problems, assess the specific dangers of the highways, and provide recommendations, solutions to the problems identified. And under little four on page one, line 38 of the amendment, develop an estimated cost and timeline to remediate the defined issues. And then by June 30th, the department shall reassess its entire construction budget and reprioritize its budget to remediate and address the solutions defined by its report. In other words, we're telling them that the if they haven't recognized the need and the crisis that the transportation, the speed, the average speed on those roads, and what the danger they're putting the travelers on those roads into, they better look at it again. They better hold these public meetings. The commissioners themselves need to be involved. And then by no later than August 1st, the department shall provide a final written report to the Appropriations, Minerals, and Transportation committees, a firm construction schedule to complete the required remedies identified by their report, and shall report its recommendation to each of the committees at their next scheduled meeting. So they'll come in front of us as well as provide that original written report and try to match the meeting dates of the committees. And then by September 1st, 2015, the department shall provide to the Joint Transportation, Military Affairs Committee, Interim Committee, a self-assessment as to the reasons why the impacts, why they didn't recognize these earlier, why they waited until we asked them last summer and had a first couple of meetings, why it wasn't a priority, why their system fails to recognize those early enough. This has been going on for several years in Converse County. It's been getting worse for many years, and we're just talking about it now. So that's what the amendment does. It doesn't ask for any more funds. It just sets up some meetings, gets some reports, and gets some things started. And they have some money to be doing the planning in between. So I ask for your favorable recommendation on this amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I'm on and against this amendment. I'm trying to figure out exactly what the sponsors of this hope. I guess they hope that they're going to get money for Highway 59 to get some passing lanes on it, but they say that on paragraph B, they say that it's reached near crisis level. That's arguable. But then you get these letters that are to be sent, reports that are to be sent, especially on page 2, where DOT does a self-assessment. And between page 1 and page 2, it's gone from a near crisis to a crisis. And now they're supposed to do a self-assessment as to some sort of mea culpa as to why they let it get this way. I just keep thinking of some sort of California self-awareness seminar or something like that. Either we're going to give money for 59, and this body's going to agree to do it and skip all the other procedures that the Department of Transportation has, or we're not. Getting some sort of self-flagellating report from DOT is not going to do anybody any good, and frankly, I don't look forward to reading one.
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. On and in favor of the amendment. We have worked very hard on this, actually, and we're being very prescriptive. I mean, more so than maybe this body has ever done with this particular department, but it is because it's a huge issue, and a huge issue to those people there in that area, the world. It's important that we note that most of the construction is in Converse County. In fact, about 75% of the construction, if this is followed through. And you do have my commitment to this body to make sure that the department finishes this
In the budget now, we have $2 million from severance funds for Highway 59 in 2026, and then $10 million from federal funds for safety issues. And then also in the contingency 2016, we have, as the number two priority in that tranche, $5 million for passing lanes. So essentially, according to the department, they would only have to come up with $4.2 million to finish in the next couple of years. But we need to work closely with the commission and to direct them so that this issue is taken care of, and so the safety of those people in that those two counties are protected. And I would ask the body to support this amendment.
Senator Anderson. Thank you. Just quickly, I've talked on this before. I don't need to repeat myself. But, Mr. Chairman, there is an element of urgency to this issue. It has to do with a lot of safety, and there's a high level of interest locally. It's a real problem. We have children traveling this highway every day in buses, a high number of employees going to and from work, and then also we have other landowners and people who live in the area that write and call me almost daily in regard to their interest in regard to safety. So without railing on, I would simply say this is something that needs to be done, and I compliment the sponsor of the amendment in regard to trying to nudge this thing forward.
Senator Benson. Thank you, Mr. President. I've had my share of victories and losses in dealing with the department, my frustrations, and I will tell you they're like us in the sense that when they get it, they get it. And I would certainly hope at this point they've got it. What I would want you to consider is that when they do these outreach hearings, they don't just send the director of the department. They take everybody involved in the design and assessment and environmental impact statements, and the bidding of these projects comes off the job and they go to the hearings. So there may be some value in simply letting them get to the drawing board and get this thing built, unless we want to be much more specific than we are and specify who will or will not come to these outreach hearings. I understand the frustration. I felt it myself. I simply would urge, let's let them get to work on this deal. And if the outreach needs to be done, we need to be even more specific and directive than we already are in this amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. For my second time, as far as who we're directing or asking to be there, on line 20, page 1, it says Transportation Commission. We had some public meetings before, and I do remember at least one commissioner, but that was it. We're saying the Transportation Commission shall hold public meetings, and that's very important. That last time, yes, we did have their public relations person, we did have their chief engineer in the second command. We didn't actually have the director there, and I don't know how many, and we had local engineers, local YDOT engineers, but this time we're saying the commission. And then as far as that moment that we had with the California group on self-assessment, that is actually the most important part of this. How did they miss when Highway 191 up through the Pinedale from Rock Springs up? How did they miss knowing that that would be loaded up with certain oil field service trucks? How did they miss that? How did they miss 59 when we had the CBM boom? And between Wright and, south of Wright all the way up to Gillette was just bumper to bumper every morning, every evening, and a very hazardous. They just don't seem to have a system. That self-assessment is more important to me probably than the rest of it, because I do know what they need, at least in my feeble mind, but I do know that they need some passing lanes and we need to get started. We've got some of the money. This will pull them together. We'll understand better. They also learned some things from our public meetings we did hold last October. This will just get a little more clarified, get the commission's attention, and move forward on it. So I ask for your favorable vote on this amendment.
Microphone.
I apologize.
apologize. There is no appropriation. The question is on third reading number two. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has been adopted.
Division.
Division having been called for, all those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. The amendment's been adopted. We're at third reading amendment number two. Would the clerk please read it in?
Three. We just done two.
Thank you. I was on the. We just passed the corrected copy. I just had the old one. And
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 3, budgets affected, Section 48, Department of Health.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of third reading amendment number 3. Mr. President, this neither adds nor subtracts money from the budget. It seeks to improve the efficiency, getting rid of an administrative middleman in here. We've had considerable troubles in our community with the, this relates to the prevention programs, with the quality of the programs being degraded and not being nearly as successful as they were. This will deal with that and I think improve the efficiency in this area of the health department. It has been a serious problem, and the kind of prevention we're talking about here, Mr. President, is substance abuse prevention primarily.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, members of the Senate, this is a major decision we are making, and this is the kind of decision that should come through the process. The Department of Health should be talking to the Joint Appropriations Committee about it. Discussion should be had. We had a similar amendment, Mr. President, to this last year. One of our great colleagues that is not here today fought very diligently on this. We were able to defeat it back then. It's no better today than it was then, Mr. President. This is something that should go through the process. This is not the way you do it, members of the Senate, on a third reading amendment to eliminate a program. I would argue that the middleman concept is not really necessarily true. In my community, this group works well. It works very efficiently. If they have some issues in Natrona County, I can't speak to those, but certainly there ought to be a way to work it out rather than trying to eliminate a program on a third reading amendment.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, thank you. I would agree with the senator from Fremont County. We've had great experience in Senate District 22 with these prevention management organizations, and I'm sorry to hear there are some areas where it's not working well, but it's working extraordinarily well in our area, and I would urge the defeat of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Dockstader.
Mr. President, visited with our folks back home this morning on this. We've had considerable success with the program. They hold monthly meetings. They're well organized, and they ask us simply to please leave it alone, against the amendment.
Senator Von Flanern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our community back home has also had great luck with this. When you talk about fiscal agents, I think contract with individual community programs or political subdivisions. In the past, that has happened prior to going directly to the preventive PMOs. And we found out that the hospital had some money, the police department had some money, various entities had money, nobody put it all together and had their own agendas to take care of. This is not a good amendment, and I think it probably needs to be defeated.
Senator Driscoll.
Filing on. Works great in the Northeast. We talked with ours. This has been good. These organizations, the way it is now, is working well in Northeast Wyoming. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Barnard.
Mr. President, I just wanted to echo what's been said. This is a really great a great organization, a great program. It would be a shame to see it go.
Further discussion before we turn to the sponsor, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a little history on this. I think it was last year. I believe it was last year. Got home from the session, and our local person providing these services received a letter that was forwarded to legislators. It said, you didn't lobby your legislators hard enough, and as a result, we're not going to need your services any longer. It was a fairly shocking letter, and so this morning I got my letter from my local organization that said, everything's great. But I saw the outcome, and the person was fired. She'd been there a long time. And it was because, according to their own document, she hadn't lobbied her legislators hard enough to support the PMO.
Honor for the amendment.
Again, for the amendment.
Well, Mr. President, it hasn't worked in our county. We've had considerable harm done to our prevention organizations. Doesn't come through the regular process because it's the way the health department wants it, and so they aren't going to bring any correction. But it's a real problem, and we do need to do something about it one way or another because it has really hurt the quality of the services in our community.
There's no appropriations as a voice vote. We're on third reading, amendment number 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. We're on third reading, amendment number 4. If the clerk would please read in the amendment.
Senate File 1, Third Reading Amendment Number 4, Budgets Affected, Section 48, Department of Health.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I move Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 1 and would ask for your favorable consideration. This is the same issue that we discussed on second reading with the Wyoming Home Services programs that are conducted under the Department of Aging and are administered through our senior centers. There are 23 of them. Each county has one of these. They are asking for $200,000 to continue serving the program, getting folks off the waiting list, able to stay in their homes, avoiding the nursing home. This was all discussed on second reading, so I don't really want to go into that a lot. I will remind you that if we can keep folks in their home, besides the improvement with quality of life, it's $1,930 a year. If we put them in a nursing home, it's $68,649 a year. So I would just remind you of that, but I would like to tell you the difference between this amendment and the one you saw on second reading. There was some, what I thought, excellent discussion on where the appropriation was coming from. The second reading amendment took it from the general file. I had to agree that was an inappropriate place to take it. So we looked at places we could get this appropriation under the Department of Health, and there were several good suggestions made. This particular amendment moves the money from the general fund in the Department of Health. So it takes $200,000 from the general fund for the Department of Health and puts it in the aging division for the express purpose of providing the home services program through the community living section. And the reason we chose this was to answer another question that was asked on the floor, which was, why didn't this come through the Department of Health? And the reason for that, because I spent a good deal of time contacting a number of senior center directors, and the reason was when they approached the Department of Health,
they were told that it would not be included in the budget, but that there would be no opposition to senior center directors contacting their legislators. So they thought this was the appropriate way to do it, given the direction they got from the department. So given that, we thought probably the general fund from the Department of Health, as they were simply following the instructions, and as one of them said, we're not really very well educated in legislative process, and maybe we need to get better educated. We're just trying to serve the seniors in our 23 counties. So with that, I would ask for your favorable support.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Landon.
Doing what they were told by the department on and for the amendment. I've stood before you before, fellow senators. I think you know how I feel about these senior centers. I'm aware of several of them throughout the state and aware of what they do for their local communities. The services they provide, this is one of them. I can't think of a better thing that we do, fellow senators, than to try to keep these seniors in their homes for the longest period of time possible. It saves us money. It gives them quality of life. This isn't much, but it's going to help somebody out there. And I think we've got a big enough budget over there that we can carve this out and help some of our seniors. So on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, recall the comments in second reading. This is an important piece of keeping people in their homes and out of the expensive nursing homes. It's the state funds only program that enables us to do some of the important things that the feds don't allow in the Medicaid match. And I really had wanted to support it on second reading, but had trouble with the funding source. The place where it's being taken this time has a total of $20.7 million in the appropriation, of which $18.5 million is general fund. I think it can well be spared there and will really help us as we struggle to keep people in their homes and keep the total cost of our nursing home programs within Medicaid down.
Senator Anderson.
Just quickly, my wife and I had very up close and personal experience with this for the last 2 years. I'll just simply say we managed to keep one of her parents out of the nursing home for almost 2 years with a program, this program. Very, very helpful to us, very, very helpful to them. And what it amounted to was 2 years at a much lower cost under this program, and as it ended, 2 days in the nursing home, and then it ended. I would hope you'd support this.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and for the amendment, according to the Wyoming Home Services Program information that they send out, says the average length of time a client is on these services is 5 years, and 80% of the clients served remain in their home until they pass away. So you can tell the amount of money that we save as a state just by the number of people that are able to stay in their home for all that length of time and the number of people that remain on it. I'd appreciate your favorable consideration.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. Folks, while this is not about the program, or let's get this straight, but my objection to this and why I'm against this amendment is the methodology. Folks, we give the Department of Health flex authority in their budget already. If this is a priority for them, or if this is the way they told them to do them, then basically they're gaming us. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that if this is a priority for the Department of Health, they can do that with their flex authority within their budget, but I don't think this is an appropriate way to go about it.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, sorry, Mr. Chairman. But the fact is the Department of Health has a very large job. They have a big budget, but they also have a large job with a lot of needs out there. And they don't necessarily know where the needs necessarily lie or even necessarily where they get the most impact for their dollar, where they get the proverbial ounce of prevention. I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the floor before, but I've been delivering Meals on Wheels for 25 years now. I'm what they call a super sub. I know all the routes in our town, and so my office is only about 3 blocks from the senior center. So anytime they have a shortage or somebody gets sick or anything like that, they call me. So it's probably once, twice a week that I've been delivering for 25 years. And so I've seen the home health care service, and I've seen the benefits that people get from it, and I've seen what happened when they went off it, when they ran out of money. This is the proverbial ounce of prevention. This is a great program. And going along, actually, with the to an extent with my chairman on this, this is one of the areas in which this body does make a difference and does set the preference and does set the priority. We just saw that from the last bill as far as highway funding went. I think this is money very well spent, and I think this body should vote for this.
Further discussion on the amendment, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, just on and against the amendment, Mr. President, the certainly the department has a very large budget. If you look at page 33, it's $1.9 billion. If you look at the Department of Aging, there's $63,951,000 in that. When we did the budget a year ago, if I remember right, I don't remember the exact number. It might have been, I can't remember if it was $10 or $14 million that this body put extra into the Department of Aging for senior citizen centers and the assistance there. This body and this department has done a good job of doing this and allocating these resources among themselves. And so to now we're coming in today and we're saying, all right, we'll take and you you have a very large job to do, Mr. Director, and you take the money out of your office and make sure that it goes over here into this program. When we start down this road, I think it gets to be very, very difficult. You have to keep in context what we've done in the entire budget biennium, not just this one. And while this is not a huge amount of money, it is nevertheless a significant amount of money. In our discussions with the department in our hearings about this in, if I remember right, in December, they talked about this and they recognize the importance of this program, Mr. President. They understand that if we can keep people in their homes that and prevent them and having them so they don't have to go into the nursing home, they understand the difference between maybe $1,000, $1,800 a month versus $5,600 to $6,500 a month in a nursing home bed. They understand that. They're looking at that, what we're doing here. I just urge you to think about that hard. We are spending large amounts of money to provide and help our senior citizens. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not sure that I know an organization in my community that's more frugal and more careful than our senior center. The work that they do, they are down to the dollars, and it's a big challenge. This seems like a good opportunity, and it does provide a little bit extra focus and attention on their particular needs. I'd encourage us to support this amendment, and if for no other reason to look around and realize with the vast years of experience this body has, this will help us keep in our homes.
Back to the movement. Senator Kraft, for your second time.
Thank you so much, Mr. President, for my second time, and thank you all so much for the discussion. I won't belabor other than to just say that maybe the methodology used was incorrect, but these are not seasoned government folks. These are local senior center directors doing what they thought was the right thing to do. So I would hate to penalize them because they didn't exactly follow what process we would have hoped they followed. I would also point out that in the Department of Aging's budget of $63 million, a lot of that is Medicaid money, federal money, and other funds that cannot be used for these programs. I would also like to underscore that, being quite familiar with a number of these centers, they really do operate on a dime. I have an email from my center that's doing a Name the Pet project or something just to get a few extra dollars. So $200,000 spread around 23 counties is, to my way of thinking, money well spent. Thank you for your consideration. I would urge your support.
Roll call. Third reading, amendment number 4.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? I'm sorry. Case, no. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon? Meyer? Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Baumflatern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed, 24 aye, 5 no, 1 excused.
Third reading amendment number 4 has been adopted. Third reading amendment number 5.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 5, budget affected. Section 60, state lands and investments.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, thank you. I move for adoption of Senate File 1, Amendment Number 5, and ask for your favorable consideration. The amendment I ran yesterday was not in correct form and was pointed out to me. This amendment actually corrects the amendment from yesterday and puts it in the correct form. We'd actually had drifted over into another biennium in the funding, and this corrects it where it leaves Pine Beetle. You heard the arguments yesterday. I encourage you to vote for the corrected version. Stand for questions.
For the questions, all those in favor of third reading amendment number 5, say aye. Oh, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the amendment. If you go in and look what this does, what you have, and this is on page 49, if you want to follow in your program, what you have here is we've got the emergency fire suppression fund. And so that's out there ready to go fight forest fires. What the joint appropriations did a year ago is we said, all right, we'll recognize that. And if we don't have a bad fire year, so we've got money left over, what we're trying to do is pull out $1 million of that fire suppression money and use it for pine bark beetle mitigation. When you look at that, when we do this, there's no guarantee that any money anywhere will be available for pine bark mitigation, because if we don't get some moisture and we have an awful fire season this year, there may not be any money in pine bark mitigation with or without this amendment. And so, to some degree, it may be somewhat academic as we talk about this amendment, Mr. President, because if we have a bad fire season, there may not be any money there left in there anyway. The other side of that is, and then going back and helping make sure that the good senator behind me, that he understands that his theory is right, then there will be a theme in some of this, is that a year from now we'll be down here looking at the same thing. We'll be reappropriating to the fire suppression account a year from now. And there's no reason to believe, I don't think, Mr. President, that our pine bark beetle infestation and the effects of that will be any different a year from now than they are now. And ultimately, we come back, there's no reason to believe that we won't have the same type of amendment as we go in. So at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're simply saying we don't trust ourselves enough to provide additional to do this again next year. And when in fact we recognize that fire mitigation and pine bark beetle mitigation are going to be with us not only this year, but next year, and the year after, and the year after, and the year after, and the year after. On and against the amendment, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, he is correct as far as the funds will go away if there is no fire. That's the way we set this up, absolutely. If we have a fire season, the funds are gone. We took that chance. We did that. We knew we'd come back. We made the commitment to this program, said that we would allow the money if we did not have a fire season to go into the pine beetle program, and that's what this does. It allows the money. The money's already going to be there if there is no fire season. What it does is allows that money to be spent. When the governor makes the announcement that he's done, well, last time when he did it, the announcement came in November or December, and it left about no time for that money to be planned into the following year before it reverted. What this does is allows that money to be obligated and spent. And it says that if the program goes on, it does not. It changes that. But this corrects what we did yesterday. It doesn't change from what we did yesterday. It merely makes it where the money is actually there. Should we not have a fire season, there'll be $1 million for pine beetle money. If we have a fire season, it's gone. I encourage you to support it.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. On and for the amendment, you know, in the event there's no fire and you use the money to mitigate pine beetles, you're in effect mitigating against fire. Pine beetles are one of the largest causes there is in regard to not only the starting of fires, but to spreading the fire. So if you use that money that would normally go to fighting fire to mitigate the pine beetle situation, you're also helping to eliminate fires. I hope that you would support the amendment.
On the amendment, for reading number 5,
we're on the amendment, third reading, amendment number 5, correcting a previous amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has, that amendment has been adopted. We're at third reading amendment number 6.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 6, budget affected, section 67, University of Wyoming.
Senator Bebout, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 6 to Senate file 1. Members of the Senate, what this does, it goes into your budget bill, and there was a portion of that bill that dealt with looking at the University of Wyoming at shall assess opportunities and costs associated with establishing a four-year degree program in Jackson, and it goes on to talk about business majors and other areas, environmental science. Mr. President, the reason I bring this amendment to you, this was an idea that was discussed in 2005. In fact, there was a committee of legislators appointed to that. My colleague from Park County was one of the members of that. The bottom line, Mr. President, and I've got that entire report here, is that at that particular time, the legislature decided it was not a good idea to move forward. Things haven't really changed now. I still believe it's not a good idea given the cost and the remoteness and all those reasons that you can see in this report. So I would ask that you support this amendment. Let's not talk about a four-year school in Teton County right now.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, believe it or not, as occasionally there is a great idea that comes back to the Joint Appropriations Committee. Joint Appropriations Committee. I can't even talk today, so it's easy for me to say. The Senate Appropriations Committee, sometimes a good idea does come up, but we recognize this one, and we wholeheartedly endorse this amendment.
Yeah. Good. Senator Christensen.
I stand vigorously. Thank you.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion is adopted. We're at third reading amendment number 15. If the clerk would please read it in.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 15, budget affected, section 67, University of Wyoming.
Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. President, I just bring, I'd like to move amendment number 15 to Senate file number 1. Members, we're going to talk a little bit later about increasing the budget for competitiveness for athletics. I think at some point in time, we need to sit down and make a policy decision as to whether we're going to continue to try to chase Division I schools or we want to look at potentially going to Division II. All this amendment does is it says the university shall provide a report to the legislature that just provides a comparison of the cost between a Division I and a Division II program, and it looks at those costs within our surrounding neighbors. Members of the body, I ask for your favorable consideration of amendment number 15.
Senator Hicks, you didn't listen to the fight song Father Dickey this morning.
Oh, Mr. President, this is about the fight song.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, go Pokes.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment, I understand the sentiment. Appreciate where the senator from the mother county is coming from. But when you look at the language, what we're really going to be comparing here really isn't the right division anyway. So, you know, you've got different divisions under the NCAA right now. I think if we really wanted this, let's get out in front of it and decide what we really want to be comparing to. And I'm not sure that comparing to a Division II status necessarily pulls in the FBS and some other things that are going on in collegiate athletics right now. So on and against the amendment.
On the amendment. Any further discussion? Back to the sponsor for his... No, Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, other than saying go Pokes on and against the amendment, members of the Senate, we've competed. We have one university. We have one four university. And for many, many, many years, we've competed at Division I, sometimes more effectively than others. We should be Division I. That's what Wyoming's all about. That's what the university's all about. The discussions we've had in the past concerning changing to different divisions was discussion that's been had. This has been debated many, many times. Wyoming should stay as a Division I school. It's our only university. Let's stick with what we have, and let's only make it better.
Further discussion before the movement takes a second turn?
Senator Mr. President, I say go Pokes. I withdraw my amendment.
Without objection. Without objection, third reading number, amendment number 15 has been withdrawn. We're at third reading amendment number 7, if the clerk would please read it in.
Senate file 1, third reading amendment number 7, corrected, copy. Budget affected 67, University of Wyoming.
Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 7 to Senate file 1. This has to do with that amendment I ran on the second reading, which dealt with the university airplane. And after further talks with the university, I come back to the body to amend that amendment, basically deleting it and coming back with this new language. They're already in the midst of contracts, so the original amendment would have said they couldn't fly those contracts, and of course there'd be the attorneys involved in that issue. So we go from on the new language. It says, for the use of the university aircraft after the effective date of this footnote, universities shall identify and distribute to a reserve fund the amounts to cover the costs for routine planned and the engine and prop reserves. So all that, so they have to set aside the money for future and planned and routine maintenance, as well as a reserve for the engines they will eventually replace and the propellers they will rebuild. And then amounts, additional amounts to support funding of replacement of the research aircraft, which will be coming up here in the next couple, 3 or 4 years, shall be included in any contract for use of the aircraft to the extent practicable. That's a tough word for me to say. So what that amounts to is that they have contracts with up to 5 years with National Science Foundation and some other, mostly federal that they cannot include or have already signed the agreement for up to 5 years to use the airplane. So for them to recapture all the individual research scientists and technicians plus a reserve for that aircraft, they wouldn't be able to do it on existing contracts in the next 5 years. So this says to the extent practicable, tough word. Amounts received to support replacement for the aircraft shall be held in a reserve fund. So that just talks about it. And then not later than October 1st, that the university shall report to the Joint Appropriations on the budget for the cost of acquisition of a replacement research aircraft. They do lease that through a leasing agreement with another company that actually buys them. They're a used aircraft. But then again, when they are done with the interior of the aircraft, it's quite expensive with all the instrumentation. So that's what it says. It just tells them they better keep a reserve fund for all the known maintenance and planned maintenance and engine replacements. And I ask for your favorable vote on this.
Discussion on the amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment number 7 to third reading has been adopted. We're at third reading amendment number 8.
Senate File 1, third reading amendment number 8 to a corrected copy. Budget affected, section 205, education, school finance.
We're on the corrected copy. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 8 to Senate File 1. Ask for your favorable consideration. Fellow senators, as I work through this presentation here, if you'll look on your desk, you'll have a kind of a handout that looks like this. Talks about school funding and says foundation guarantee. If I kind of dig that out a little bit, because I may talk about and refer to that occasionally. In the 2001 Supreme Court Campbell 2 case, the court required that the legislature to design a funding model for K-12 education. And I quote from that ruling, because education is one of the state's most important functions, lack of financial resources will not be an acceptable reason for failure to provide the best educational system. The court also directed the legislature to make periodic inflationary adjustments to the funding model, saying that, quote, without such adjustments, legislative inaction appears inevitable, and ultimately funding of education will be below cost in contravention or violation, in other words, of the Constitution. Well, senators, I think we've probably arrived at that contravention at this time, and as the court has expounded in their statement. In its ruling in Campbell 2, the Wyoming Supreme Court stated also, and as I quote, we hold that the model must be adjusted for inflation every 2 years at minimum. In order to maintain a cost-based model as the court directed, the legislature enacted what we refer to as the External Cost Adjustment, or ECA, into law under Wyoming Statute 2113309O. You should also have a copy of that statute in the packet I've given you, and I'd like to quote from that. Between periods of model recalibration required under subsection T of this section, the amount computed for each district under section M, subsection M, of this section shall be adjusted to provide for the effects of inflation. Then later on in the paragraph, it goes on to say, and shall be adjusted on a cumulative basis each school year thereafter. It doesn't say may, or maybe when we get time, or maybe when we get around to it. It says we shall adjust the model each year for inflation. The ECA has not been properly implemented since school year 2009 and 2010. In fact, no ECA was applied within the model between the four school years of 2010-11 in 2014. A partial ECA was provided this past budget session, but falls way short of the required inflationary adjustment. Now, what results have we reaped from ignoring our own statutes and the court's order to provide periodic adjustments to the model? In 2013-14, 70% of our school districts in our state have had to lay off staff. Districts have had to increase class sizes and hire less experienced teachers with fewer credentials because of budget constraints. 73% of our school districts have had to curtail or reduce new programs or initiatives like the STEM program. We will hear the argument that there is little or no market pressure for hiring teachers in Wyoming, which then leads us to believe that no inflation adjustment is needed. However, the need for an ECA and the labor market for teachers is really not even connected. They are two completely different issues. Market pressure for higher teacher salaries is a function of supply and demand. If a district has to hire teachers at higher salaries, it's because the pool of available applicants is either low or fewer teachers are willing to teach in rural education, as we have here in Wyoming. And if our universities and colleges are not graduating enough teachers to fill that pool of positions. We hear the argument that teachers are overpaid in Wyoming and we're not getting our bang for the buck. Well, Wyoming is rural and attracting high-quality teachers to areas with the nearest Walmart 100 miles away, with the nearest regional hospital 3-hour drive, and the nearest specialized medical care 5 hours. In fact, it is challenging and requires a reasonable compensation to attract high-quality teachers by our districts. But these teachers will make a difference in our educational system in Wyoming. You will hear the argument that according to a legislative labor market study, that our teachers' salaries are competitive in today's market. First of all, this is something that is dealt specifically with in the recalibration process and completely outside the ECA process. If recalibration determines that salaries need to be adjusted, then that can be dealt with at that time. ECA deals with inflation, and inflation is a function of economic forces driving prices of goods and services and the cost of living upward. Adjustments for inflation doesn't increase the value of a teacher's salary, it only maintains it. School districts receive block grant funds which the districts allocate to various categories that will provide an optimal basket of educational services. If an ECA is not applied to the model on a yearly basis, the districts are forced to begin robbing Peter to pay Paul from available funds and diminishing the overall quality of educational services. According to a report by the School District Coalition, the lack of properly implemented ECA has resulted in a loss of the foundation guarantee to the school districts around $152 million since the 2010-11 school year.
Time.
And with that, Mr. President, I'd ask for your consideration of this amendment.
On the amendment, Senator Scott.
Yeah, Mr. President, on the amendment, and part of the argument for the amendment was a legal argument that we're compelled to do this by court decision. And I would suggest to the Senate that we are not so compelled, that and Mr. President, my reasoning is when you look at the United States Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Now, that's not a provision that has been particularly litigated. There isn't much meaningful court, or maybe no meaningful court precedent on what that really means. So you've got to look back, Mr. President, in our history. And you look at the events that led up to the American Revolution, the protests against the stamp tax, the protests against the tax on tea that led to the Boston Tea Party, the other events that led to the revolution. And when you understand that, you understand that in a republican form of government, the people retain control over the spending that the government does, either sometimes directly, and we see that in New England, we see it in their traditional town meetings. Here we see it in votes on bond issues, on optional sales taxes, but primarily through the election to short terms of elected representatives in their legislatures. And the essence of a republican form of government, Mr. President, is that the elected representatives of the people retain control over the spending and thus over the taxes. And I think it is our duty to decide whether an inflation adjustment, as is proposed, as I understand it, by this amendment, is a good idea or not. It is not the place of the courts. And we ought to exercise that judgment, and I guess we're going to have a few minutes vote and exercise it right here and right now. And I will say to the Senate that I'm having a good deal of difficulty. I can see strong arguments on both sides of this. There hasn't been much inflation in our society in recent years. And in part because I think the economic activity has been suppressed by excessive governmental regulation. But there hasn't been as much economic activity. From what we've seen, and we fund our schools very well, Mr. President, in the K-12, it looks like the level of funding isn't affecting much the performance of the schools. And the question, and I'm really unpersuaded about it, and hope there would be more debate on the issue, is do we really need this inflation adjustment at this time, or can we safely wait till the recalibration and have a good recalibration, a good look at what we're doing and what's it doing in terms of the quality of our schools? Do we need to reallocate some within our school spending? Do we need more money? What's really going on? And I hope that the debate will focus on that set of issues and not on any alleged legal compulsion to what we ought to do.
Senator Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, and I'm going to tell everybody what we have done with the ECA because I researched it all. And remember, first of all, when you start talking about how schools are funded, remember that schools are funded with a block grant with different components of funding in there. Now, remember that we do have Supreme Court mandates, and one of them is that the model, the K-12 prototypical model, will in fact be cost-based. So when you start talking about the model, remember that it's about 68.42% professional staff, 14.47% non-professional. Educational supplies and materials make up 14.05%, and the energy category makes up about 3.07%. So, members of the Senate, I have here, dated April 2014, teacher salaries in Wyoming. Here's how we compare nationally. Salaries in Wyoming, $59,314. U.S. average, $57,580. You go around the surrounding states. Colorado, $57,769. Idaho, $47,258. The low being South Dakota, $40,165. Then there's Utah, second at $50,870. So you have to talk about teacher salaries. Now, when it relates to the ECA, remember that the Supreme Court requires the legislature to recalibrate the funding model every 5 years. And we did that in 05, 010, and we're going to do it again this year. Where this debate needs to take place is in recalibration. Now, as to what we've done with ECA, remember that we have a cost-based ECA. We factor that in. Then we have a legislative ECA that we've factored in, because the legislature has chosen over the years to fund schools better than the cost-based model. If you go back to 2008 and 9, cost-based ECA, 4.30%. Cumulative ECA change, 8.26. Cumulative ECA change in the legislative model, 8.26. Now, let's skip down to 2012, for example, and 13. Cost-based, 0.28%. The cumulative ECA change, 12.59%. If you look at 2015 and 16, the one we're living in right now, 0.46% is the cost-based DCA. The cumulative is 13.34%. Cumulative ECA change, if you take it all the way out in the legislative model, 14.03%. So for school year 2014-15, the professional staff category was adjusted 1.045%, non-professional 0.995%, materials 0.75%. If you look at 2015-16, which we did last year, professional staff category will be adjusted 1.725%, non-professional 1.645%, materials 1.26%, and you remember last year we actually lowered the energy component, 0.90%. Based on what we did, the ECA decision infused for 2015 and 16, 22.9 million more into the funding model. And that breakdown, just so the body knows, I'm working on the monitoring the cost basis of K-12 funding model dated October 2014. That broke down professional staff 2015-16, 17.189 million, non-professional 3.1 million, educational materials 3.05 million, and energy negative 490,000 for 22.86 million. Folks, we have lived up to our statutory requirement. We have looked at the ECA on an annual basis. We've done market analysis on salaries. We do that every year, every single year. Recalibration is coming up, and I can tell you that the two committee chairs of education voted against the ECA, but we got outvoted. Some voted it up, and we wanted to vote it down. But the bottom line is, members of the Senate, this process of ECA discussion belongs in the upcoming process of recalibration, which we will undertake as soon as we pretty much get out of town. It'll start in the interim immediately after this session's over.
Time.
So I ask that you defeat the amendment. Let's do this in recalibration.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, many of you might think, well, he's just getting out because he was a teacher. Well, was is the word here quite a long time ago. But I've not forgotten a lot about what teachers endure and what teachers go through and the sacrifices they make. But I don't want to make an emotional argument. There's been a constitutional argument, an argument in regard to the data, argument, a lot of the statistics. So I'm going to just talk about, you know, that I go back to this thing, politics are local, and I know who I represent, and I know my district pretty well. Statement's been made that there's not been much economic activity in order to drive the cost of living up. That's not the case in my district. There's been a considerable amount of economic activity in my district, and these are somewhat guesses, but I think they're close approximations. Two-bedroom apartment probably in center of the boom area, probably 750 to 900 a month. I don't know for sure. Three-bedroom house, if you want to rent it, will probably cost you from $900 to $1,250 a month. A new teacher coming in, and believe me, we've gotten some really good teachers, and these are teachers that I can go back and know how things were in my day and watch them and say, boy, I wished I could have done it that way. They're great teachers. They moved in several years ago with the idea that they would do with an apartment until such time as they could afford a house. Well, they can't afford to rent on the apartment. They certainly can't afford to rent on a bigger house. And I would say, and I've been kind of working my way through the real estate market in that area, a typical three-bedroom house will probably cost you $100,000 more than it might in some other area. So what happens to these good teachers is they get discouraged as they have children and find out they're not going to be able to move up in the community like they'd like, and so they move out. And we've lost a good teacher. And that is then contradictory to the efforts that we're making in regard to achievement and accountability. The only way we're ever going to get there in regard to the achievement standards and accountability standards that we have, regardless of all we do here, we've got to have good teachers. And so then as they move out, then we fall back in that effort. I think that we really have to look at this in terms of how it affects our whole state. I think that the case has been made in regard to whatever our legal obligation is, and you can interpret that any way you want. But I think from a practical standpoint, if we want to maintain the standards, we want to make the achievement efforts that we need to make, and we need to move forward in Wyoming, I think we're obligated to provide what these people need in order to make, I think, a living in today's economy, and at least in the economy that I see in my district. I'd urge your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over on the western side of the state, and it's not just limited to the county that I represent, a few years ago when we saw the economy change, prices started going down in a lot of places. Well, prices didn't really go down on that western side of the state. But what did happen is the values changed. Some people came up with a little more money. There were some vacancies, and so property changed hands. And the outcome has been the property prices have gone up. And before you think, oh, that poor little rich county over there, I'd ask you to remember that the people we're talking about here are the working class. They're not the folks that ran those prices up. They're the people that were coming in as young teachers trying to find a home, trying to put down roots. It's the folks that have been renting that are just trying to kind of keep it all balanced. This is a real challenge on that side of the state. But before we just stop there, last night at one of the receptions we went to, some of us went to, there was a discussion about rental property here in the center of the state, big town in the center of the state, and how even with the jobs and some of the news you've seen, the bad news in the papers about layoffs and companies sending people home, the line for rental properties is not shrinking. They're getting snapped up right and left. The market is strong if you have the product. But if you're out there looking for the product, every dollar counts. This is a huge challenge, and I ask you to take this amendment pretty seriously.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Just to kind of piggyback off on that, the county where I live and the districts I represent are also having difficulty keeping up with the cost of living in my part of the world. I'd like to, though, share with you that our current funding model for educators places Wyoming's teacher salaries 27th in the nation. I would prefer not to wait for recalibration, and this is the reason, because I see our best and our brightest educators coming, excited about being here, staying a couple of years, and going elsewhere because they can't afford to be in my part of the world anyway. I opened my email this morning, and I had two emails. One was from a counselor, and one was from a teacher, not asking about the ECA, both asking me if I would write them letters of recommendation because they're taking jobs outside the state. I really do not want to see the drain on our most precious resource for education. That would be our teachers slip away to other states. Thank you.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. Mr. President, it's been interesting. If the discussion, the first discussion was up, the allegation was that there's been a lack of financial resources applied, that there's been legislative inaction, that there's there has not been an adjustment for inflation every 2 years, and so it's about inflation. As now, it's not about inflation. It's not about the ECA. What you've heard in your last several arguments, Mr. President, is simply times are tough. It costs a lot to live out there. So the last arguments haven't been anything about inflation. They've been about it's expensive now, and so we should pay them more. That's fair enough, but if that's the method on which we award and compensate our teachers, then we need to do that for everyone that's in state government. And in fact, if that's the case, it is when we do have cases where we have falling prices, Mr. President, if that's the argument we're going to use, then we ought to decrease salaries when prices recede and we don't have those booms. But back to the point on the ECA, the allegation seems to be that there hasn't been inflation adjustments. I think the good senator from Park County dealt with that very well. But here's some other additional information you need to know for what's already being paid and what's already in law without this amendment. What you have is that there will be an additional, over and above what was paid last year, additional $2 million for non-professional staff. There'll be over almost $3.7 million for additional materials. On top of that, with what we did last year, there's the second half of the salary enhancement payments, which will total $6 million. If we go in addition to that, what's not in the ECA, what's not in the model is that the health insurance costs, which are pegged to the Wyoming state, what the state pool pays, and it goes out, and keep in mind that they're not in the state pool. Some of them may pay more for insurance, some may pay less. $23 million of additional money to cover the costs of health care insurance will go out this year under the existing model without this amendment. The at-risk model, an additional $6.4 million will go out this year and under the existing model. For transportation and special education, which is 100% reimbursement, the estimate for this year will be another $4 million. For the regional cost adjustment, which identifies some higher cost areas as opposed to other lower cost areas around the state, $426,000. When you look at this from its inception, we have just a few facts. When you look at this in the longer haul, beginning in the year 2000, K-12 funding in this state from 2000 to 2016 in the current budget will have increased $835 million, or 130% over what was paid in 2000. Total enrollment increase, if you look from 2000 to 2016, has been an increase of 2.56%. That's because in the years from 2002 to 2006, there was a significant student population decline. We've seen steady growth from 2006 up to now and continues to grow. But the actual funding back in 2000, we had only 2.5% between what the enrollment population in 2000 versus 2016. So it was shortened that window up from 16 years to the last 10 years. From total funding increase from 2007 to 2016 is $43.6 million, or 42% from 2017 to through 2016 as it exists. So as you look at what we're doing, what's been done, the fact of the matter is, when you look at the numbers, and you look at the statute, there has been adjustments for inflation. There may not have been the adjustments that other people bought. When you look at it, you can go pick an indice, and if you always just peg to an indice, you can peg to whatever indice you want. But nevertheless, there has been inflation. There has been and continues to be adjustments for inflation. The state is meeting its obligation, and in fact, any allegations that there has been legislative inaction, if you just go back and look at the funding that we have appropriated, is inaccurate. At the end of the day, the point of what we're trying to do is fund our schools, fund them appropriately, fund them in accordance with our own models and what we've done. And I submit to you, we've done that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for the amendment, the good chairman of the Education Committee and I have had a lot of conversations about this, and we've certainly seen a lot of presentations about it. We've seen all the data. We've seen all the graphs. And we do have some disagreements on how it's been implemented over the years. Mr. President, what I've seen is that there was good adjustments. There was an appropriate response by the legislature in that history between 2006 and now, but regrettably, most all of the appropriate response took place between 2006 and 2010, the last time we recalibrated. Since the last recalibration, there's been approximately 10% of inflation, about 2% a year over 5 years, and we, the legislature, have given around 1-ish percent of ECA, and that's why we have fallen behind relative to the last recalibration. Mr. President, when you think about the model that we have, it's a very reasonable model. Every 5 years, we have a recalibration that determines the cost basis. We get together, and we're going to do that after this session. We're going to get together, and we're going to try and figure out how much it costs to run our education system based on current needs, based on best practices, based on the objectives that we as a state want for our children in the education system, recognizing changes in technology, methodology, and everything else, and we set that basis. But we only do that every 5 years. So the reason for the external cost adjustment is to hold that basis for 5 years. An ECA, Mr. President, is not a raise. It's never a raise. The intent of an external cost adjustment is simply to recognize that purchasing power erodes with inflation each year, and you have to account for that. We do that through four indices. We do that through a professional staff index, a non-professional staff, materials, and energy. Those are the indices that we use in our model, and we keep track of that year after year, recognizing that inflation will occur, and in one case with energy, the prices actually dropped, and the model then dropped in terms of the energy costs. But there hasn't been a drop when it comes to the regular inflationary indices, and those continue to increase. It's whether or not we absorb those into the practice instead of just the model side that determines whether or not we're keeping up with the purchasing power. So, Mr. President, your education committee, for the last few years, has said 2013-2014 biennia was a reasonable number to work with. It was the point at which we saw the district struggling from a cost basis, and the recommendation that came from the Joint Education Committee was to hold harmless relative to 13-14, maintain purchasing power at that level, not giving raises, not increasing salaries, but maintaining the purchasing power relative to those 13-14 years. And the recommendations that we see here simply do that. They maintain relative to inflation versus the 13-14 budget without giving increases. There's nothing exorbitant. There's nothing that actually allows for an increase in salary relative to inflation, but just maintain at that level, recognizing once again that we will be showing up for recalibration. And if we want to make substantial changes, that's the time in our system when we do it. But it's not an or. It's not recalibrate or give an external cost adjustment. It's recalibrate and you shall give an ECA between those recalibrations, recognizing that that is what maintains the purchasing power, and that's what maintains the decisions that were made during the recalibration. Now, we hear a lot about the cost basis concept, and I've been concerned for years about how we look at the model cost basis for salaries. And what we basically do is look at the pressures, is what we say. Are there pressures on the salary market or on the market from the salary standpoint? And the way we really look at that when we sit down in JEC and we have our consultants and experts come and present to us is, are people quitting yet? No, not yet. Are people quitting yet? No, not yet. That's basically what we've heard for the last few years, and that is what has led us to conclude that there's no reason to give an inflationary adjustment or ECA. Not enough people are quitting Wyoming and leaving the state to go to other states, therefore we have no problem. But that's certainly not the spirit or the letter of the Supreme Court decision, which indicates that we're supposed to give an external cost adjustment between our recalibrations and that we're basing our funding on the recalibration. Every year we don't give an external cost adjustment is a decrease in the purchasing power for the school districts. No one is trying to increase the purchasing power between recalibrations. That doesn't make sense. It's not consistent with our system. But, Mr. President, what we are trying to do is maintain that purchasing power and let the system operate as it's intended. Recalibrate, maintain. Recalibrate, maintain. We are going into a recalibration, but we need to uphold our responsibility to maintain relative to the prior recalibration, Mr. Time. President.
Mr. Vittori, floor leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, just capture for a moment what my colleague from Albany County said. maintain. Well, if you read the statute, and I'm going to read it one more time, it talks about the ECA shall be adjusted to provide for the effects of inflation. Now, I'm not on the Education Committee, but I just talked to the co-chair of that committee, and there was a report given to that committee by our consultants that we pay good money for that says, oh, by the way, we are keeping up with inflation. We don't need to have an increase in the ECA. We have people that look at all the different values, the different factors of this. This is what they tell us. We do not need an ECA. We're keeping up with inflation. We're maintaining what we're talking about here. You know, it's hard to really tell everybody here all of the extra money that we have pumped into the foundation program over the last couple of years. My colleague from Natrona County and Park have given a lot of numbers, but here's one that was not given to you. In fiscal 15-16, compensation by the Appropriations Committee that's not been mentioned here today was an additional $12 million in salary, additional $14.6 million in retirement contributions in 14, an additional $12.3 million in contributions in 2013 for 15-16 budget. That's another $38 million. The last thing I want you to remember and think about is the legislative mandated parts that we've added to the foundation model and the cost-based model. I don't have those numbers in front of me. We can sure get them to the members of the Senate, but that's around $90 million. So maybe what we ought to do is we ought to eliminate the legislative mandates, take away that $90 million, and give them $5 million for an ECA. I don't think they'd like that. The education in Wyoming is well-funded. We should be proud of the levels we funded at. Our teacher salaries are up. Quite frankly, Mr. President, when I travel around the country, I don't hear about Wyoming teachers going to other states. It's the other way. They're jealous of what we do in Wyoming. They're jealous of the kind of starting salaries we pay for these teachers. They're jealous of the averages we pay. It's interesting that there are some in Sweetwater County that are leaving. I don't quite understand that because that's not the message I hear about what's happening with teachers around the state. We pay very high. We're also ranked consistently in the top in the country in our ADM spending. We spend, what, $17,000, $18,000 per ADM? We can be proud of that, but it seems like there's never enough. There's never enough. I submit to you there has been enough. We've stepped up. We're funding education at the levels we should. We should defeat this amendment.
Mr. President, on against the amendment, let's not forget that it's not this amendment versus no increase in spending. They were already getting $6 million, plus the Appropriations Committee put in another $5.75 million. So that's $11.75 million additional we're putting in this year. But I wanted to address a couple of issues that were brought up. One is from the Judiciary Chair in front of me and the others from the Senator from the center part of the state who's in the booming state right now. Congratulations to him. I wish we were having that boom up where I am. Those are both functions of the regional cost adjustment, not the external cost adjustment. If apartments are expensive in Converse County right now, then the regional cost adjustment should be covering that. If apartments are expensive in Teton County right now, that's the regional cost adjustment. Up where I am, we actually had a drop in our regional cost adjustment. We were at 105%. Now we're down at about 100%. And I've been getting squawks from one of my smaller districts as a result of that because they've gotten less money. And then the good senator from the Ivory Tower, he accurately pointed out that we had more regional cost adjustment between 2005 recalibration and the 2010 recalibration. One of the reasons is because when we came to the recalibration 2010, it's a cost-based model, a number of the school districts, it turns out, were above the cost-based model. They were getting more money than the cost-based model called for. Now, what we could have done at the time was take away money, cut money back. We didn't do that because it would have been a hardship for them. So we slowed down somewhat on the ECA for the first few years. It only makes sense to do that. We've got another calibration, as the good chairman of education said, another calibration starting within weeks. So and what I'm concerned about is that we go ahead and pass this ECA, And then the recalibration comes, and it turns out we've overpaid again to a number of the school districts. Then we're in the same situation for the next few years where we're not giving them any increase, any ECA, because they're overpaid according to the cost-based model. Do we want to do that? Do we want to do that to them?
Thank you. Speaking on and for the amendment, I agree with my good friend from Natrona County. I, too, chafe at being told by anybody this is what you got to do. It's like having your brother sit on your chest and give you twist your arm and try to order you around. That's not why I'm in favor of the ECA. And I do agree that we've been very generous. I am not an expert on the formula. To me, it's a black box. But when you put the money in here and you grind the black box, you get a spreadsheet and it shows what comes out at the end. And what comes out at the end is in many respects uneven. And it's particularly uneven for those of us like who represent rural school districts. Yes, there are adjustments in the model for rural schools. And still, they labor to produce the results they produce with far too little resource. And this adjustment means a great deal to those rural school districts, which I represent. That unevenness extends as well to the inflation. The regional cost adjustments represent our best efforts by our best minds to try and capture everything that's going on within the state of Wyoming. But we know that within that region, there are isolated differences. And again, somebody's made reference to the function that we went to last night where I heard about one community in my district that has rural schools where the housing costs are absolutely out of control. And I don't know that that is well captured within a regional cost model that has a lag time that may not fully capture what this inflation means to a rural school district. So I would urge your favorable consideration of the amendment.
Mr. President, much has been said. Appreciate the charts, the graphs, the references to statutes. That's all good. I spent some time, not just on the phone, but going out and meeting with the districts in my three county area. And let's just bring it back to keeping it simple. They showed me where they had made the cuts, where people were duplicating, doubling up to take care of additional responsibilities. And even administration in some case was stepping up to the plate and moving into classrooms to take care of replacements. They tried to adjust to it by making the cuts, and they reached that point where they can no longer cut. They're looking for some help. So through all of this, all the charts, the graphs, the references of what may come or may not come in the future, all we're simply trying to do here, members of the Senate, is keep pace with inflation. It's not an increase, just keeping pace. I'd ask for your favorable vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, I too will, at the risk of the wrath of Guido, you know, there are, Chairman Guido, you know, I stand in favor of this amendment. You know, there's a lot of talk of the amount of monies that we're giving to the school districts. And I know that at one point an $11 million figure was thrown out there, and I know that there are others. But let's take that $11 million for just a second, and let's divide that by the 48 districts. And it's about $229,000 roughly, somewhere in that area, by dividing that. But in my district, in Sweetwater County, I've been told that, you know, that the adoption of just one of the curriculum standards that this legislature imposed, the adoption of that standard cost the district $1 million. So when you put it in perspective of, yes, there's a lot of money being put into it, but then dividing it out and then looking at the cost of implementing the programs that we have mandated, then it quickly gets used up. I really want to stress that, and no confusion over the fact that there is only one funding model. It's not cost-based. It's not the consultants. It's the legislative model. We chose this. It's what we mandated to the school districts. The cost of 16 to 1 is huge to the school districts. As I said, the cost of implementing programs is huge to the districts. The testimony that I recall hearing in September at JAC that we do pay high, that our average is high if you look at that. But if we paid by the model, we'd be around 27th. I also recall in the testimony that we don't have funding for elementary counselors. We do provide a block grant, but there's a lot of issues outside the block grant that districts are having to pay for. And it's not just about teacher salaries. It's about the cost to the districts. It's about the cost of the programs. It's about the cost of everyday business. And if you look and you talk to districts all around the state, I know from my district and I know from talking with folks from around the state that I have asked that each one of these districts is declining in their resources. They have had some reserves that they've been utilizing, and that those numbers are going down. And, you talk about the legal obligations. You know, we had a consultant tell us back in 2006 that they believe that the ruling from the Supreme Court says we should are obligated to adjust for that. I certainly had a learned colleague tell me that, in a Supreme Court ruling is open to interpretation, but it certainly looks to me like that we are obligated legally, but more so we're obligated morally to fund the mandates that we have imposed on the school districts is critical. And that's where we should be looking at is our moral obligations to fund the districts and mandate and fulfill our obligations. Yes, we've put money into it, and yes, we've made demands. And it seems to me that the scales are tipped to the fact that the mandates have cost more than the resources provided. So we need to continue to do that. And in my humble opinion, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, is that the fact that we're doing recalibration is great news. Recalibration won't come into effect for at least 2 years. Yes, we're going to start doing that in a couple weeks. But you're looking at years down the road. We made these decisions years ago. And currently and years ago, these are the obligations we need to fulfill today. Let recalibration take care of itself. Fulfill our obligation today. Support the amendment.
Senator Ross.
On and against the amendment.
Folks, before we go to the second time, is there anybody that has not spoke for the first time that wants to speak to the C amendment? I would ask them to talk now. Okay, now we're going to go through it the second time. We've heard a lot of argument. Let's try to tighten it up. Senator Coe.
Mr. President, great debate, great discussion. But I want to say just a couple of things. First of all, if you look at the salary structures of teachers, we rank third in the country if you factor in cost of living. Third in the country. Secondly, we rank in the top five in the country for ADM spending, $17,800 and some. This has been a great debate when we talk about it. There's nobody that is a stronger advocate for education than I am. Nobody wants it to happen better than I do. I believe strongly in it. I'm passionate about it. I wouldn't be standing up here talking to the body today if I didn't think that we had done it extremely well and we're going to keep doing it extremely well. And recalibration, in fact, will kick in July 1st, 2016. But we don't have to wait around for years. Good things happening out there. One of the top states for public schools is Wyoming. We rank seventh now on how we fund and how we do things. We've got some great programs in place. We got an educational system that is fantastic what we've done. We've got National Board Certification Initiative. We've got the Hathaway Scholarship Program that a bunch of us worked on a number of years ago. But we fund education well. Now, remember also that we give them a block grant. We don't tell districts how to spend their money. And legislatively, we have chosen to fund the K-12 prototypical model significantly better than our consultants told us was the cost basis that the courts have mandated. As to small schools, we did a special small school adjustment some 4 to 5 years ago. We recognized the inadequacies of some of the ways we funded small schools. What will be one of the big debates in recalibration? It'll be the regional cost adjustment, because we understand that teachers that live in Jackson got to be compensated differently than the ones that live in Sundown. So I'm proud of the way we fund schools. I just don't think this is the time to come in the face of recalibration being right around the corner. We're going to look at everything, no question about it. So I'd ask you to defeat the amendment. I understand the passion of it. It is a passionate thing. Local school boards, local schools, local control, incredible lobby out there. We love our schools. But in this particular case, I'd ask you to defeat the amendment.
Any further discussion for the second time before the movement? Senator Cooper takes his last and final time. Senator Cooper, for your last and final time.
For my second time. Mr. President, I'm a kind of an old country boy, I guess, when it comes to figuring out some of these terms that we've been talking and bantering around the Senate today on this issue. But I do know this, Mr. President. If you're out in the country and you get stuck in a rut with your old truck, you got a couple of choices to make. One of the choices you can do, you can try to dig yourself out, which this amendment attempts to do. Or you can spin those old wheels until you just bury yourself so deep you're never going to get out of that hole. My position is on this amendment, Mr. President, is to help us dig our way out. We have made promises, or we've made requirements, rather, to these school districts to provide certain a type of education which we believe, according to our Constitution, to be a proper and quality education. You know, that's part of the landscape here. That's part of the law of the land. And we've been required to do that. And what we're trying to do by this amendment is simply provide for those quality services, provide the funding for our districts to provide for those quality services. It's clearly the best choice for this amendment and to get us back on the road again. Let us think back again. As we have talked about today, and we have talked about the law, but the fact of the matter is the law, the Constitution is the law of this land, does require us to do this. The fact of the matter is it's the right thing to do. It's a thing that we need to do. If we impose, as has been said on this floor today, those issues, those programs that we expect them to do, the way that they have to get quality teachers and keep those quality teachers and maintain those quality programs is to be able to provide the access to the funding that they have. The people, the districts that are affected more by this little ECA that we're talking about here are the small districts. Those districts simply cannot afford or have no way to move those funds around in their different categories that they have. Large school districts have the opportunities, but not most of the rural school districts that we have here in this town. If you want rural school districts like we mostly have here in this state to be able to attract good teachers, provide a good quality education, which we've been harping on for years in this body, we need to have good quality education for our students. This is the way we're going to do it, and this is the way we need to do it. We need to pass this amendment and move on with things and provide the type of funding that our school districts need. Thank you, Mr. President.
Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquivel? Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladern?
No.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Landon, no to aye. Closing vote?
Hicks, no to aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 19 aye, 11 no.
Third reading amendment number 8 has passed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, do you want me to say something, I guess? If you...
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate take leave to rise and sit again.
When we come back, we will start with laid back amendment number 1. So it asks Senator Anderson, 28, to confer to make sure that amendment is in order. Announcements. Oh, I forgot. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. That's been adopted. Do we have any messages that we want to read in? We do have some messages. Standing committee reports.
February the 19th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 38, engrossed, PAC, Campaign Limits and Funding, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 18th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 106, engrossed, Non-Consensual Towing Services, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Esquivel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Any further messages? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that does clear the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate stand in recess until 1:30.
Announcements, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet in a couple of minutes to hear the following referrals: House Bill 44, Emergency 911 Fees, Prepaid Wireless, Health, and House Bill 88, Health Provider Recruitment Programs, both of which are referrals.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, will meet upon adjournment today in room S-15 to consider House Joint Number 6, Engrossed, Wyoming Local Food Production, House Bill 2224, Engrossed, Burn Order Violations.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee Number 1 will meet Friday morning at 8 a.m., room S-1, to consider the following bills: House Bill 96, Catering Permit Limitation; House Bill 145, Principal and Income Act Amendments; House Bill 146, Engrossed, Uniform Trust Code; House Bill 160, Special Warranty Deeds; House Bill 161, Retirement Account Exemption from Execution; and House Bill 214, Engrossed, Practice of Law Amendments.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet in about 20 minutes, quarter after, in room S-16. We're bumping that up 15 minutes to get to these three bills. House Bill 25, Railroad Rolling Stock Tax Exemption Sunset; House Bill 81, Wyoming Lottery Distributions; and House Bill 62, Engrossed, property tax exemption for religious education camps.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, your committee minerals number 9 will meet Friday, February 20th, 15 minutes after noon recess in room S18 to hear House Bill 152, Industrial Siting Impact Payments, House Bill 212, Workers' Compensation Claim Apportionment.
Any further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
It's a good thing because we don't have a quorum. The Senate will stand in recess until 1:30.